Hello there and welcome back to the History Rocks podcast. Today we are continuing with our reflections, this time on paper two, and we're going to look in particular at the primary sources, what worked, what didn't work, my own thoughts on it this year. Again, the health warning must be said. I do not represent in these podcasts any formal exam boards. I'm not here in any official capacity. These are my own opinions and not endorsed by anyone. So take them with that little caution as you will. I'm going to start, though, today's episode with a slightly more risque joke than I usually tell, and I'm going to wait for all of the complaints coming in. We'll see. It goes like this. A Frenchman walks into a library and asks for a book on warfare, and the librarian replies, "Well, no, you're only going to lose it." I know, it's really inappropriate, I'm sorry, but it did make me laugh. Anyway. Let's get into this. Paper two primary sources, if you recall, and we've looked at this before and we've talked about structure a little bit before, but, you know, some fresh thoughts, I guess, coming out of this period. Paper two is asking you to evaluate the value of primary sources. So everything that a student or a candidate writes down has got a link to an assessment of value. Now, the first thing is that I think some candidates only have a very limited, a very myopic view of what value means, and they don't go much beyond whether it's factually true or not. And that is a bit of an issue, I think, in the quality of answer that's presented. It's not about testing something for accuracy. It's not about testing the sources for accuracy, testing facts. It's about the value that that source gives you as a historian investigating a particular question. So I would suggest, if you haven't already, check out the historyrocks.co.uk website. There is a free source value checklist there, which at least gets you started off. These are points that me and my own students discussed about the sort of things you can look for when you're looking for the value of a source. And I think that will go some way to help. Because a source can be written in a particular way where the facts are not true and not accurate, but still be valuable. And I think, you know, if we're only going to limit it to a test of whether the source is accurate or not as to whether it's valuable, it really limits the overall answer. So that's the first thing I would say. In addition, and I think we should spend some time at this, I felt, looking at some of my responses that came back and looking at some others, that the real issue with paper two, section A, is provenance, and it's still there. The provenance that's displayed is often quite generic and quite pedestrian, quite formulaic. What do you mean by that? Well, what I mean is those sort of stock phrases that you can apply to any primary source. We are still seeing some answers referring to bias within the source, for instance, which again is a very sort of, I mean, it's not even GCSE standard now. You know, GCSEs are hard. It's a very basic comment to make on provenance. We're still seeing a lot of description of the source's attribute. So source A was written on this date by this person, and it was this type of source, full stop. Now, two problems with that. One, it makes no assessment of value at all. And two, it makes no link to knowledge. You essentially cannot talk about the provenance without knowledge. Because if you are, all you're doing is simply describing the provenance of the source. You're not really evaluating it in any way. So listen, we've said before, when we're looking at provenance, you can look at the five W's. Who wrote it, what type of source it was, when it was written, why it was written, and who for. Those are the big five W's I always talk about when we look at provenance. Now, with those, it's more helpful if you know something about the author, something about their background, their role during this time, their views, their opinions, their motivations, their ideology, you know then why he's trying to argue or she's trying to argue what she is within that primary source. You are able then to comment if you know that they're a particular architect of a certain German policy or something. You will be able to explain how it's unsurprising the sort of things that have been said within that source. But still, that it's valuable given their position within the government and their role during that particular thing. If you're going to talk about when it was written, what was going on at that point, how does that affect the content and tone of the source being put forward? Yeah, there's no point in just saying it was written in 1946. What does that tell you? Absolutely nothing. Yeah, other than that's when it was written. I can read that, you know. Your examiner will be able to read that the fact it was written in 1946. That's just not good enough. It needs to go beyond that date. What was going on then? How does that affect the source? How does that affect the value of the source itself? So provenance, and I've written about this on the blog, actually, on the history.co.uk website, historyrocks.co.uk website. Provenance needs to be linked to knowledge for it to be meaningful. Okay, so it's really important that if you're going to discuss provenance and those five W's, you use supporting knowledge to explain how that links to the content in the source, how that explains the tone that's been adopted in the source, the purpose of it. Does that affect the value of the source? What were they trying to achieve with that source? That makes for a much more meatier section on provenance. I guess my other issue then with provenance is that often it's dealt with in its own little paragraph at the top of the answer, somewhere at the beginning usually. And it's like, oh yes, we've got to cover the provenance bit in order to tick that off before we start having a look at what the source itself is saying. Now, when you've got these two separate paragraphs, one on provenance, one on content, and then you're likely to do one on tone at this stage, they're all divorced from each other. And really, they shouldn't be, I don't think. I've said it before, I think a better structure, and there are many ways to skin a cat, and I fully appreciate that, but a better structure would be to split the answer along the lines of what makes a source valuable, and then what limits the value of the source, followed by some kind of overall judgment on the value of the source in relation to the question. That way, you can talk about content and provenance at the same time. So for instance, if author X, and you've said something about author X and their background, you can link that then to what he's saying in the source. So the fact that it's written by author X makes it no surprise that he's arguing this in source A. This certainly does add value because, do you see what I mean? They can link together. The tone can link to the author quite well, for instance. So I just don't think they should be separated out in the same way. There are natural moments where the provenance will explain what is being said in the primary source, or it will explain the tone adopted within the source or the purpose of the source itself. Why separate them out? It seems really pedestrian and generic, formulaic. And that way, I think, actually, it reduces the overall quality of the answer. So try not to separate them out. Try and merge them together, but do it in a way that you're looking at what's valuable about source and then what limits the value of the source after that. Which, of course, leads into the second thing, is about having balance. Still quite a number of answers I've seen are talking about how the source is valuable, but very little in terms of where the limitations are, or the limitations that have been mentioned are really not especially convincing. We're still seeing a lot of bias pop up here and there, or it's written long time after the event, or it was written close to the event, or all of these sort of very generic statements. So we've got to try and move away from that. You need to give it some thought as to how these things are limited or not within the value. There are still, I would say, some limits to people discussing tone, fewer examples of whole paragraphs of tone, I think, this year. But what I would say is the vocabulary that's being used to express tone is still very limited. I've seen a lot of negative. The tone is negative. Okay, is there anything more than that? There's been a lot of hyperbole as well. And it's not really... Now, this is my view and you might disagree with it. I don't think hyperbole really is tone. Write in if you disagree, but I don't think it is. I wondered where this phrase has been borrowed from. Is it been borrowed from one of the other humanities courses they're studying this year? I'm not so sure. But, you know, if you're struggling, again, go to the website, historyrocks.co.uk, and we've got a free poster on there that gives hundreds of different words that you can use that expresses tone. And I think that could help, you know, if maybe for the teachers out there, if you give them a little word bank or something like that, that they can draw upon. Equally, if you're teaching the Cold War, we've got some fantastic exercises that intertwines tone with emojis and things like that, that you might want to check out. So yes, I think tone, you're not really looking for anything more than a couple of sentences. And I would link it to the provenance, and equally I'd look at the kind of vocabulary you're using to explain it or address it, making sure, of course, you're linking it to the overall assessment of value as well. And then finally, you know, it's just making sure that you're interrogating the sources enough. If you're only pulling out, because quite often I think with some of the weaker end, we're seeing an awful lot, maybe 3/4 of the answer focusing on provenance, and maybe only 1 or 2 comments on the actual content overall, which is not enough, really. I don't think there's been or is a suggestion for the split. But, you know, really, I'd be looking for 2 to 3 arguments being made in the source, for instance, or ideas or points or causes or consequences or anything like that in relation to the question. I'd aim for 2 to 3, and just don't let the provenance over-dominate each of the extract answers. Right, so just a few thoughts, but, you know, I hope you find them useful. And, you know, if you've got any ideas or suggestions or things like that, you can tweet us on MyHistoryRocks. Equally, if your team is looking for any additional support, maybe you want to know whether you're marking things accurately, for example, drop me an email on hello@historyrocks.co.uk. Right, we'll have a fantastic rest of the day, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from each other very soon. Bye now.